to Eye on Horror, the official podcast of iHorror.com. This is episode 123, otherwise known as season 7, episode 4. I am your host, James J. Edwards, and with me, as always, is your other host, Jacob Davison. How you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing all right, just recovering from a midnight movie hangover the St. Patrick's Day, because I was out late last night at the midnight show of Leprechaun over at the New Beverly.
The original?
Yep, the OG with Warwick Davis. I'll get into it more once we get to the main show.
We're recording this on St. Patrick's Day, and I don't see any of us wearing green, so pinch, pinch.
I'm wearing green. I'm going to virtually pinch you both.
Also with us, as always, is your other host, John Correa. How you doing, Correa?
Doing fantastic. Happy St. Patrick Swayze Day, everybody. I'm gonna pop on Swayze dancing when I'm making food a little later. If y'all don't know Swayze dancing, it was a dancing VHS tape that Patrick Swayze's mom made and hosts, and he's one of the dancers to help you learn the Swayze dancing. It's very wholesome.
There's actually kind of a lot of cool horror that's come out since last time we talked, but let's go first to Imaginary. Have either of you guys seen Imaginary?
No, I haven't gotten to that one.
Imaginary is it's better than Night Swim, but it's still typical Blumhouse. It's basically this woman moves back into her childhood home with her adult family, her husband and two stepdaughters, and one of the stepdaughters finds a teddy bear in the basement and has like a imaginary friend named Chauncey, and it turns out this is the same imaginary friend that the woman had when she was a kid. So of course there's trouble afoot there. It's one of those where I don't think they quite stuck the landing on it. The beginning parts with the bear the way they handle the bear is actually really cool, because it's not like Chucky where the bear goes running around. The bear is kind of like a shapeshifter. So like it goes from like teddy bear to there are scenes where it gets more menacing or turns into other things. But when they're just focusing on the bear, it's one of those deals where you're like, okay, wait, did that bear's facial expression change, or is that my imagination? You know, it's that kind of creepiness. About the halfway point, it turns into an Insidious movie. So it goes from like, you know, paranoia about this toy to, you know, flat out into the further we go. So it's a well-made movie, which is what Blumhouse does when they're pumping these movies out. But, you know, it's not going to be one. I mean, it's not going to make my top 10. I already know, but it's an interesting movie.
Yeah, I did like the preview picture of the bear in, you know, like monster mode. That did look kind of cool.
Yeah, the bear in monster mode, that picture's a little bit of a spoiler, because it doesn't really get to that mode until they go into like the further. But, you know, saying it goes in the further is a spoiler as well. But yeah, it's a fun little, you know, haunted toy movie, I guess. But again, you know, it's not going to make my top 10, but something that is going to make my top 10, I'm sure of it. Love Lies Bleeding.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Did you see Love Lies Bleeding, Korea?
No, I'm trying to get that money, guys.
Oh, my God. Love Lies Bleeding. You did see it, Jacob?
Yeah, I was at the premiere, or the LA premiere, with Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, and Rose Glass. And yeah, no, I thought it was an amazing movie. Like, it was kind of a neo-noir. It was a dark romance. It was kind of a crime caper. It's just such an amazing movie. And also big year for lesbian crime movies, between that and Driveway Dolls.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, but it kind of does have some things in common with Driveway Dolls, but it
it's much darker.
This is Rose Glass, who did Saint Maud. This is much less of just a pure horror movie than Saint Maud. This is almost like a Coen Brothers Tarantino kind of thing, and it takes place in the 80s, which the only thing that makes it, and I liked this, it didn't completely lean into the 80s as much as it could have. The only thing that's obviously 80s is the hairstyles. You have like Kristen Stewart has a fee mullet and Ed Harris has like this skullet. He looks like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror.
But then, and then when he gets serious, he braids it.
Yeah. And then Dave Franco has this rat tail. It's, oh my God, the hair.
But and the porn stash.
It is, yeah. But it is, it's more of like a, like you said, it's a neo-noir and it's like a revenge thriller, but oh my God, it's so great. And the thing is, it's funny because it kind of, it, I mean, it explores like domestic violence and steroid abuse, like these serious issues, but it's always got kind of this dark humor to it. And Jenna Malone and Kristen Stewart play perfect sisters. They're like, you know, when you look at Jenna Malone, you're like, oh, you know, or when you look at Kristen Stewart, you can be like, you know, she looks like she could actually be Jenna Malone's sister in the, in this. But if you thought the ending, I'm not going to spoil anything, but if you thought the ending to Saint Maud was like weird, just wait until you see the ending to this.
It's a job dropper.
Bleeding. It like borders on the absurd. You're just like, you know, and it's one of those things kind of like Saint Maud where you're thinking, you're like, okay, you're seeing this from the point of view of one of the characters and you don't realize it until that point. But yeah, it's oh my God, Love Lesbian is so good. Kriya, you have to see it. You're gonna love it.
Yeah, you know, if you're a K-Stew fan, this one's for you. And she makes a great pair with the extremely ripped and actually ripped Katie O'Brien.
First of all, what makes you think this isn't like my most anticipated film of the year? Just because I haven't seen it yet. That's not due to lack of wanting. I mean, first of all, give me all the like aggressive lesbian action crime movies. This is, we're living in a renaissance between Bottoms, this, and Driveway Dolls. It's what a great way, what a great age to live in. And yeah, it's literally just like I physically haven't left this chair in like a week, so I will be seeing it soon. Trust me, it's up there. Rose Glass, I will watch anything and everything she makes after Saint Maud.
Yeah, one of my favorite reviews was from a friend saying that Love Lies Bleeding is the kind of movie the characters from Bottoms would be obsessed with.
That's a great review. That's a great review. Oh, man.
As for me, I've managed to see some premier horror movies in the last week. I think most prominently, I got to go to the Alamo pre-screening for Late Night with the Devil with David Dasmalchian.
Ooh, how? Yeah, what, did it live up to the hype?
Is that the talk show?
Yeah, that's the talk show one. Yeah, so basically, it's about this kind of lost and fictional late night talk show from the 70s called Night Owls, and David Dasmalchian plays the host, and he's dealing with a ratings war with the Tonight Show, and he's trying to think of ways to boost the ratings. So on Halloween night in the late 70s, he does a Halloween special where he has on these guests, including a psychic, a paranormal investigator and disprover, and a psychologist with a patient who claims to be possessed by a demon. And shit goes off the rails.
Is it like a is it presented like a found VHS tape?
It's kind of a mockumentary found footage. Like the impetus is that it's like the lost master tape that was dug up.
Okay, the master tape. I was wondering if they did fake commercials like WNUF.
No, they didn't do commercials. Although the interesting thing is that, you know, they have the stuff on the main show, but also they show this kind of behind the scenes footage during the making of the show, you know, in between the segments. So you kind of see them people acting on and off camera. And, you know, just I really hope that this boosts David Dasmalchian, because he really does have leading man energy, and like he's very charismatic in this as the host. So, you know, it's definitely a horror comedy, and it is a little bit in line with stuff like WNUF, because it has kind of, you know, the 70s talk show kitsch with like, you know, jokes and bits. But when the horror hits, and it was very unexpected, like caught me off guard a bunch, it hits. So, yeah, I really dug it. I'd highly recommend it.
When it was first announced, I think they released a poster or something. It just felt like this is the perfect showcase for David Munchausen. Like, that dude has been like needing like a vehicle to like truly show him off, because he always shines in everything he does. So that's very awesome to have something that like gives him that opportunity. I'm excited for that one too. Yeah,
I am too. I'm a sucker for like lost media movies like that. You know, like, you know, Ghost Watch kind of, you know, found footage kind of stuff. So, and especially if it's done creatively, which it sounds like this isn't just, and 2 years later we found their tape, you know.
Yeah,
this
no, it's a lot deeper than that.
Yeah.
No.
So I'm excited for this one.
And on my, business trip, I read a lot of that Satanic Panic book. Dude, it's crazy. And they have a whole segment about, Geraldo Rivera and like his Satanic Panic special and all that stuff. So I'm like ready to go in there. Not nitpick, but I love to read stuff like that. It's a really great book, and that opening essay about Michelle Remembers and regression therapy is incredible. I actually just watched a very bad episode of Star Trek Voyager where they were critiquing regression therapy. That was very
weird.
Yeah, it was like a Me Too episode, only it was to go against regression therapy. It wasn't handled well. Brian Fuller could have done better. It was one of his episodes, but yeah, anyways, this isn't a Star Trek podcast, Korea. Stop it.
But anyway, yeah, no, just it does play a bit into the Satanic Panic in the late 70s. So it just draws from a lot of culture and horror and stuff at that time, because, you know, it's a period film. But yeah, no, it is solidly made. I would recommend it.
Very excited. Do we know if it's going to like Shudder or is getting a wide release?
Yes, it will be a Shudder release. They did the pre-screening last week, and then it's getting a run at Alamo starting Thursday.
Thursday. Hell yeah. Well, so it'll be out when this episode comes out, so definitely go check it out. Yeah, it's getting rave reviews right now. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Either way, it's out there, and yeah, you know, definitely going as blind as possible. It's very surprising.
Yeah. I haven't been able to go out to theaters as we're showing so far right now with this episode, but I did finally get to watch my 4K of Hackers. And let me tell you, Shout Factory did an amazing job with that transfer. Hackers has never looked and sounded so good. And what a beautiful film that, because I had to show Lindsay, because I've been shouting Hack the World at her anytime anything computer comes up for years now. And so to finally show her the amazingness of like what 1995, how that view of the world was with the cyber stuff between Strange Days, Johnny Mnemonic, and Hackers, it's a really special film. It truly is. And it makes me wish that there was more rollerblading in movies, because there just isn't enough rollerblading in movies.
Did you bring your rollerblades? I literally go nowhere without them.
I mean, Fisher Stevens is fucking incredible as the Plague. What a great villain. Like, why are villains so serious these days? Like, I mean, like, he was serious. He was very serious about what he was doing, too serious about what he was doing, because he was a ridiculous being. But like, I think with this viewing, the biggest shocker to me was his cohort to Fisher Stevens was Alberta Watson. And it with blonde hair, she was the therapist in The Sopranos, and she's really, really, really good in The Sopranos, and she is not great in this movie at all. It was really weird seeing, like, because in The Sopranos she's really good at doing like stone face and like little and showing like little breaks in emotion and stuff, and so for her to try to do over the top in Hackers, it was brilliant. It was bad, but it was brilliant. Yeah, Hackers again. It's incredible. As always, Screen and Shout Factory did a great 4K. So if you have a 4K player and you don't own Hackers, you're fucking up. I'm just gonna say it.
I got another premiere wanted to discuss. Have either of you seen the movie Lake Michigan Monster?
Mm-mm. No. But you've already got my attention, being the big cryptid fan that I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing. It was the previous movie to the movie I wanted to bring up called Hundreds of Beavers.
I've heard of this.
Please tell me that the title is not a metaphor.
No, it is literally about hundreds of beavers.
Yeah.
It's so basically, yeah, like Michigan Monster was kind of like a throwback comedy movie because it is about this sea captain trying to kill the lake monster of Lake Michigan. Even had a sea shanty. And those same filmmakers, Mike Chelsick and Ryland Brixen Coltoos, they made this movie over the last few years. It actually took them over 4 years. Yeah, it's called Hundreds of Beavers. It takes place in the 19th century, and it's about this applejack farmer, or you know, this guy that makes apple cider and hard cider, and his apple farm is destroyed by a rogue beaver. So he's lost everything. So he decides to become a fur trapper. And so he has to fight this scourge of hundreds and hundreds of beavers that are rampaging through the forest and chopping down all the trees. And it is just one of the funniest movies I've seen in years. Like within the first 5 minutes alone, there was a scene that made me laugh so hard I cried.
Are the beavers the bad guys in it?
Yeah, pretty much. And the thing is that it's all, well, for one thing, it's all black and white. It's like a silent movie, like nobody really talks. And the beavers and raccoons, skunks, and other animals are all people in these kind of mascot costumes. So like there's wrestling moves and beavers getting shot out of cannons or like thrown with catapults. So it's just like a beaver carnage extravaganza. And like there's a lot of green screening and After Effects that, again, makes it feel like a live action cartoon. So there's just like room for so much slapstick. And the fur trapper gets his ass beat by raccoons and birds and other animals, so it's like a lot of back and forth. But
I predict people are going to go to this movie on acid in droves.
Yeah, that's definitely one way of doing it. But I mean, I was sober, and it still felt like, I don't know, like I was watching a movie from an alternate universe where silent films never stopped. So it was just kind of like a modern comedy with that kind of old school aesthetic, and it also had a lot of video game influences too, because like there's this whole thing where like the fur trapper is trying to get supplies from the salesman. It's kind of like a Legend of Zelda or Mario thing where he has to collect certain items in order to craft other items. Like he has to get a certain amount of beaver pelts in order to get a baseball a club to kill more beavers so that he can get more pelts, so that he can get more items. And also because he's starting to have a thing for the merchant's daughter, so there's a whole subplot there. But yeah, a lot of it is just like beavers and all these other animals getting blown up or thrown across the horizon. It's one of the funniest slapstick comedies I've seen in a long time. Although there is like some scenes of horror, because like there's like when the night falls, there's like other nastier animals that start tracking them down.
Diesel.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. Like, it's got a limited run right now with Limley Noho, and like they're putting the movie on tour. I can't remember exactly how far, but yeah, I think it's a self-distributed movie. So hopefully, it's doing the limited run, but hopefully it should get a main release soon. But yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It is insanely funny.
I hope it gets hundreds of screenings.
We can only hope.
Have you guys heard of a movie called Come and See?
Oh, I know that one.
Have you seen it?
Not yet, but I know its reputation.
Yeah, that's what it has a Criterion release, and the last few years, it's kind of like you said, the reputation. It's been it's from, I think, 87, maybe 85, but it's from the 80s, and it's basically about a kid who he lives in. He's Russian, and he kind of joins the resistance to the Nazis, and he's like 14, so he's way too young to be fighting Nazis. But I guess what else do you do when your village is being pillaged? And it's basically about the atrocities of the war. I mean, the reason it's got its reputation is people have been saying, like, on the internet, they're like, oh, the scariest horror movie ever isn't even a horror movie, and I wouldn't go that far. It's not really scary so much as it is just disturbing. There's, there's a lot of atrocities of war. And probably the most memorable bit about it is he meets this girl and they go back to his house. And this happens fairly early in the movie, so this isn't really spoiling anything. It's just kind of a taste of what kind of, you know, a movie this is. He goes back to his house and there's no one there. Like, his family is not there. So they kind of go, he's like, I know where they are. So they start walking away from the house, and the girl like looks back, and he doesn't look back, but the girl looks back, and there's just piles and piles of bodies piled up against the back of the house that she sees as they're going by. And you're like, okay, this movie means business now. You know, this is, it's a crazy one. It has a Criterion release. I don't know where else you can get it. Maybe it's on the Criterion channel. I'm not sure where you can find it streaming wise, but it has a Criterion release, and it's quite an eye opener. It's a pretty powerful movie.
Yeah, that cover art for the Criterion release is very haunting. It has been one where I'd never. It's one of those like the old video store days where you see a cover and you're like, I want to know more about that, but then you never do. So like, yeah, I've never known more about that movie outside of its cover. So
yeah, the cover is just the kid's face, but he's completely shell-shocked, which is kind of how the viewer looks too when you're seeing this stuff, especially through the lens of this 14-year-old kid. You're like, holy crap, you know, this kid, he has to grow up fast.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the most disturbing horror film that's not even a horror film, it's a war movie, is still Threads is fucking,
oh yeah, that
horrifying.
One fucked me up.
Yeah, that third act.
My most disturbing movie that's not a horror movie is still Compliance.
Yeah, no, same. I was gonna say that. Yeah. That's the one that did it for me. That movie fucked me up.
It's just so, and it only becomes a horror movie when you realize it's real. You know, like this shit really happened. And if you watch there, I think I brought it up a while ago. There's a documentary on Netflix called Don't Answer the Phone, which talks about the real story. And the real story is pretty close to what happened in Compliance. That makes it even more dirty of a movie. Yeah.
Although back on horror, and also found footage, I also saw a new horror movie through VOD called Frogman. Have either of you heard of it?
Mm-mm. I saw a post.
Yeah, I heard about it through the internet grapevine, too. I don't remember who specifically, but yeah, no, it just sounded interesting. It's basically, you know, it has kind of a basic found footage type setup where it's like this guy, an amateur filmmaker, when he was a kid, he got footage of a local cryptid named Frogman. So he... like years later, he decides to go back to where he saw it in order to try and get real footage and to try and prove it is in fact like a real creature. And he drags along some friends, and they go to this small town where everybody's kind of cashing in on Frogman fever with like merchandise and shops and stuff. And the cool thing is that he decides to use the same video camera that he originally got the footage of Frogman as a kid in the 90s. So it is filmed in a analog fashion. But yeah, no, it went into some pretty unexpected directions, and it did have some really amazing effects for a movie with this definitely felt like a bit of a low budget affair. And yeah, it's by Anthony Cousins. It's on VOD now, so I rented it and I liked it so much I bought a VHS version from a Lunch Meat, like the VHS distributor. So it's, if you like found footage, this is definitely your kind of jam.
Lunch Meat VHS does such great work. I have a few of their releases, including We're All Going to the World's Fair.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Heavy Metal Parking Lot. That VHS tape is so good.
It's all That's yellow. The only way to own Heavy Metal Parking Lot. Oh, on man. VHS.
Yeah, I got the Blu-ray too, but you know, got to cover my bases.
Same, exactly. And also Strawberry Mansion. I'm still surprised that hasn't gotten a release. I think it's a Music Box Select distributed title. That's one that Dan Deacon scored, which is an amazing score, of course. I mean, it's Dan Deacon.
Yeah, I've heard about it. I really got to check it out.
Oh, that one's fantastic. It's on VOD, so you can get it on like Vudu and stuff. But like, yeah, for some reason, like as far as physical media, I can only find it on that Lunch Meet VHS. So fingers crossed someday. We'll see.
All right. Well, Frogman was a good time. If you're still down for more found footage.
It checks off two of the boxes for me, found footage and cryptids. So,
oh, yeah. He's got both in spades. Oh, also, I got to see an early screening of The Primevals, you know, the lost Full Moon Entertainment movie. Have either of you guys heard about that one?
Yeah.
I've seen the poster for it, which looks...
Oh, yeah, it's badass.
Amazing.
He's got Yeti. You got to have the Yeti.
Because didn't they do, like, a lot of, like, the effects work already and like
yeah
it was like something where it's like all the stop motion and stuff was like mostly done and that but they ran out of funding or something like
exactly yes yeah they filmed it mostly in the early 90s it was just unfinished for a long time and they finally I think they did an Indiegogo or Kickstarter to get the funding to properly finish it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very much a Harryhausen throwback because it's like these Sherpas kill a Yeti. The Yeti is put on exhibit at Museum of America and these scientists decide to go back to the Himalayas to try and find more of the Yeti. And it turns out there's a whole lost world with like hominids, Bigfoots, lizard people, lost civilizations. And like there's so much stop motion effects and practical effects, and they managed to really thread it with modern CGI that it looks pretty cool. And it's just great because it is perfectly in line with like a lot of those Full Moon pictures or even earlier to kind of the Empire Pictures era, just with these big ideas and like lots of practical effects. So I really dug it.
Sounds like a fun Jules Verne-esque adventure.
Oh, without a doubt. And also, Korea, I think you'll appreciate it because there's a lot of Star Trek references. Like at one point, a character even yells Star Trek while pointing at a spaceship.
Oh, wait. How'd you know I was into Star Trek?
Just a guess, I suppose.
Do I just give off that vibe? Do I just give off Trekkie vibes?
Yes.
He says after spending 8 hours watching three different Star Trek shows the day prior.
Yeah, I mean, you just dropped Voyager in our last conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in the middle of watching Voyager and Discovery catching up before the final season. So it's a lot.
Before we move to our topic, let's discuss the Oscars, which happened last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, we have Oscar winner Godzilla Minus One.
Yay!
Which is awesome. And they were so excited to win that Oscar. It was so much fun to watch them win that. And also, Zone of Interest won Best Sound, which was also amazing because the way that the guy, when he accepted the award, put it, he said, I just want to thank the Academy for listening to our film because it was up against, you know, these deafening sound movies like Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, and Oppenheimer. And the sound in Zone of Interest is so subtle, but it makes the movie. So I was really happy that won. Robot Dreams did not win, but you know, that's just because nobody has seen it yet. As you guys will see, Robot Dreams is going to come out in America later on this year, and you guys are going to be all, oh, the Academy got that wrong.
That was a tough fight, man. I mean, like, yeah. It didn't get as wide of a release, and it was up against a Studio Ghibli and Spider-Man. And
plus, you know it's what I mean? It's a much simpler form of animation. It's like 2D, you know, 80s animation. The Robot Dreams people are the only ones who supplied a customized little graphic to show on the screen of nominees behind them. The robot and the dog are wearing tuxes with bow ties and stuff in their little panel. I was like, oh man, they should give it to him just for that.
Which, by the way, I don't watch the Oscars. I just get the news as they come in and stuff. But like, what was there? They had a bit with the dog clapping.
Oh no, the dog from Anatomy. There's a whole story behind that. But there's a dog in Anatomy of a Fall, which was up for it. Actually, won Best Original Screenplay, but it was up for a bunch of awards. The director was up for director and it was up for Best Picture, and the actress Sandra Hüller, who was also in Zone of Interest, she was up for Best Actress. But the dog Messi, he went to one of the Oscar luncheons, and he's like a really cute, you know, personable dog. And so I guess some of the other producers complained because not all Oscar voting was done, and they're like, oh, they're going to buy votes by having this cute dog campaign for them. And it's like, well, you can have your stars there and campaigning too. But they supposedly banned the dog from the ceremony, but they walked back on that because they let the dog in. And this dog is, I mean, God, she's coming at, I mean,
it's a cute dog.
I cut it all out, but you guys, you know, hear my dog's barking all the time while we're recording. This dog is super well behaved, but they would cut to him during the ceremony at times, and they either had fake paws or they were moving his paws because they'd show his face and his little paws at the bottom clapping.
No, it was fake paws because I saw a picture of a guy like crouched below and he had like two fake paws on sticks to do that.
Yeah.
But I just saw the clip where they're like cutting to people clapping, and all of a sudden you just see like Ryan Gosling just being like, what the fuck? Like the type face of the dog clapping.
Ryan Gosling stole the whole thing. If you haven't seen it, just look up him doing I Am Ken, because it that musical performance is amazing. I mean, there are other Kens from Barbie there, and it's a whole production number. And about halfway through, and this isn't really a spoiler because he played on the track, but Slash and Wolfgang Van Halen pop out and they're like, you know, guitar dueling and it. Oh.
And it was they based it off of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, the Marilyn Monroe performance too. Like even the backup dancers and the Kens were all dressed up like there was and Ryan Gosling had like a gender flipped pink suit with the gloves too. Like as soon as he came out, I was like, are they doing Gentlemen Prefer Blondes? And then sure enough, the backup dancers came out with the ties. I was like, oh, that's great.
He was going through the audience, passing the mic to people. So like, you know, Emma Stone and Greta Gerwig, they all got to sing a line. It's really well done. And the other high point of the show was John Cena giving the Oscar for best costume, and he was naked.
Wait, was that John Cena? Because all I saw was a floating envelope. You can't see me. I'm waving the hand. I'm doing John Cena. Although
one of my favorites was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito calling out Michael Keaton as Batman, since they were both Batman villains.
Yeah, and he was there. Michael Keaton was there too.
He's in the audience, and he was like, "Come get it."
Yeah. First of all, this is how my evening went. I was working on the podcast, getting the episode prepped and all that, and I saw Godzilla Minus One.
That was the award they gave away, the twins reunion.
But all I saw was that it won. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I saw, Schwarzenegger presented it. And so I was like, you got to hear Schwarzenegger say Godzilla. It's hilarious. I'm like, that's great. Wait, Danny DeVito's next to him? There was a twins reunion? And so like, I slowly was getting all that information. And then someone's like, yeah, and they made a Batman reference because they were both villains, and they cut to Keaton. I was like, what the fuck happened? Like, basically that sounded like the best moment of the night. And for as good, I did hear it was a really good broadcast, except for once again, the memoriam was
the memorial was the worst that I can remember seeing, because not only did of course they're always going to forget people, and you can kind of understand that, but the thing is you couldn't even read the people because they were showing the dancers and the singers the whole time, and they put the slides of the people up in the back, and it was only like the biggest ones where they leave on there for the longest time that you could actually read. And then they would show like these lists where the print was super tiny. You're like, no,
on like a circle.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's like, nobody cares about these dancers or this. And one of the singers, there were two singers, and one of them was a younger guy, and he was terrified. And you could tell whenever the camera was on him, he was like, super. I mean, he was hitting the notes perfectly. He was singing great, but you could tell he was super nervous. It's like, oh, dude, give that guy a break. Let him sing his job and just cut to, you know, show the slides on the TV. Yeah, it was the worst in memoriam that I can remember there being. And there have been some bad ones. All right. So enough about the Oscars. That went on longer than I thought it was going to be. I thought we were just going to congratulate Godzilla and Zone of Interest and move on. But
Good always trip.
The topic this week we're going to talk about, and this I'm going to let Korea expound on this because it was all his idea, but we're going to talk about our favorite trolls. And I have to admit, I'm not sure if I understand this assignment because all I'm going to do is talk about Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick. So explain what we're doing here, Korea.
Well, there's three reasons why. Last episode, we talked about the Razzies, which are a bunch of internet trolls. And while I was in Breckenridge, Colorado, I got to meet the giant wooden troll. And also, I did want to give Jay an opportunity to talk about the Trolls trilogy and how much he loved it. But also, trolls fucking rule. I mean, just trolls are one of those things where, like, it seems like almost every culture has like their own version of a troll. It's not talked like dragons, you know, like, why is that? There's so many different kinds of trolls, small, big, funny, scary, actually goblins, you know, there's just such a wide spectrum of trolls. I just wanted to take some time to celebrate the unsung heroes of fantasy and horror, which are trolls. So I want to kick off this discussion with the most terrifying troll to ever be on screen. And that's Trantor, the troll from Ernest Scared Stupid. because Ernest Scared Stupid, I saw that as a kid, and that is heavy New England mythology. It pries on a lot of fears that happen when you're a kid growing up in the woods of New Hampshire. And that movie terrified the shit out of me with his three noses and everything. I was petrified of Trantor, and I still haven't watched Ernest Scared Stupid since a kid, because I'm all set with that. You know, it's like graveyards at night. I don't mess with it. But yeah, what do you guys think is the scariest troll that you have seen on film?
The scariest one for me is, and I know that you're planning on talking about this too, so we'll just rip that Band-Aid off, is the troll from Troll, the Netflix movie that's just a couple years old, which directed by the awesomely named Roar Uthog.
Yes.
That's the most awesome name for the movies he makes, because he also makes, you know, The Wave and The Quake, you know, those Norwegian disaster movies.
Oh, I know him well. Yeah. You guys know I love those movies.
But yeah, troll is that, because he's like a kaiju kind of troll, and he's kind of, I guess he's kind of made of stone. He's made of like natural material. You know, there's part of the movie where I think she goes into the footprint. She's all, there's no organic material here. It's all dirt and rock. Yeah. You know, they can't get basically any troll DNA out of one of the footprints. But yeah, he's like this giant rock kaiju who just destroys the shit out of Oslo.
Oh man, that movie fucking rules. Cause it really did take like the sensibilities of like the natural disaster movies that they would make, like The Wave, The Quake, and The Burning Sea. And when, how do we make a kaiju film like this? And so it harkens a lot back to Godzilla, when Godzilla is treated like a natural disaster, only this time it's a massive, massive troll. And I can't wait for the sequel. Oh man, I'm so excited.
No, the sequel's in production though, right?
I'm so excited. Yeah. I can't wait, dude. You guys know that was one of my top films of that year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really got to watch that. It's still on my to-do list.
Oh, dude, you're going to love it. You're going to love it, Jacob. Jacob, what was your scariest troll?
Well, again, this is more a matter of personal opinion, but I was really creeped out by the troll from the original Empire Pictures troll movie by John Carl Beekler, Turok.
The one with Sonny Bono and has a character named Harry Potter in it.
And Harry Potter Jr., yes. And Harry Potter Sr., played by Michael Moriarty from Q, the Winged Serpent. Yeah, no, it's a weird movie. But yeah, no, it's something really creepy about that troll in particular, especially because, like, he's, you know, like, turns people into, like, elf people and nymphs. He turns Julia Louis-Dreyfus into a forest nymph. Which she played the footage of on her last appearance on Saturday Night Live. So that was pretty fun. But yeah, no, I mean, like, John Carl Beekler's effects really help sell it, because it's all these little practical effects, weird little monster people. And yeah, it's like Turok the troll trying to bring back his troll fantasy world. So he turns everybody else into trolls and forest creatures and stuff. So yeah, he's a weird little guy.
It's worth noting that this movie is from, I think it's 1986.
86, so yeah.
When they have a character named Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling is ripping them off.
3D, you don't want to go down that hole, because there's a Neil Gaiman story that you look at the cover and you're like, yeah. Anyway. But no, I mean, yeah, that it's such a fun movie. And that weird song they do in it, it's like mushroom singing and stuff, man.
And the little goblins and trolls, yeah, sing. Something like that.
Oh man, yeah, no, the original Troll is really incredible, and its sequel, which we can't really talk that much about, because even though it's called Troll 2, it's not a single fucking troll in the movie.
Yeah, because it's Nilbog. It's goblins spelled backwards. This is their kingdom.
Title only, but still one of the all time greats.
Troll 2 actually holds the title, they say, of the best worst movie. And I think was it a behind the scenes or
no, it was a documentary. Really,
yeah, it's not behind the scenes. And
Michael Stevenson, the guy who played the kid in Troll 2, made the documentary years later about kind of the cult effect it had. And I'm actually in that documentary, because they did a segment at a screening of Troll 2 at the Brattle Theater in Boston in like 2006 or something. And this was when Troll 2 fever was at an all time high, or maybe 2007. But anyway, so you can see me in the audience when they're talking to everybody. And they actually had like some of the stars of the movie do a round of Guitar Hero 2, because there's a Nilbog level. And you can and also like, there's a big group hug with like the guy that played the dad, and like I'm one of the guys in the group hug with him.
Dude, between this and your appearance on Nick Arcade, we've got some hunting to do.
We're not doing this again, because in a previous recording, I think it was off recording, Jacob said that he appeared on Nick Arcade, at which all of Nick Arcade is on Paramount Plus, and I wasted an entire fucking morning.
Oh my God.
Combing through the episodes, trying to find young Jacob in it. And I have still yet to find him. So I'm putting out a wanted. If you can find Jacob in an episode of Nick Arcade or Best Worst Movie, I will send you something cool.
I actually went while you were doing that, Kriya, I went to see any similar shows just in case he had the show name. You know, maybe it wasn't Nick Arcade. It might have been one of those other game shows about arcade games. And I couldn't find anything there either. So, yeah, we're still on the hunt.
I got to ask my folks, because, again, you got to keep in mind, I was like not even 10 years old when I did that. So I'll need like a reminder, like maybe my folks will remember better, but I am in Best Worst Movie. I mean, like only for like a scene, so it's not even that prominent, but I am in there. Although if you want to see me really in the background of something, you can see me in the background for Digging Up the Marrow, the Adam Green found footage mockumentary type movie, at a signing with Kane Hodder.
Wow.
Like that, okay. That is very prominent.
We're not saying Jacob's lie. We're not accusing anything.
No,
we're just saying
he's there. We think the details are missing, and that's what we're trying to piece together.
It's a mystery.
Internet sleuthing. Yeah.
These rabbit holes are dangerous, and I have too much stuff to do.
Yeah, I didn't force your hand. I didn't force your hand.
But you instilled the need. You instilled the want. and thank you for reminding me, because I do need to continue Nick Arcade.
Oh boy.
Anywho.
You're binging Nick Arcade.
Trolls that are in movies.
Yeah.
The topic of the
Yeah, well, it's not exactly a troll, but again, it's St. Patrick's Day and I was at the midnight show, so I would like to mention Leprechaun. That was a lot of fun, and you know, it's again not exactly a troll, but I mean it's, you know, an evil leprechaun, so I feel like it kind of fits that mold.
I'm gonna fight you on that. It doesn't count. That's a leprechaun. That's different.
I know, but
because leprechauns are imaginary and trolls are real. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
that is a big difference right there.
And the proof is in the very real documentary called Troll Hunter. All right, where
very real documentary. Okay.
Yes, that is not.
They don't put anything on Netflix that isn't true.
Right. Troll Hunter, everyone knows that I'm not the biggest fan of found footage films, but Troll Hunter, from 2010 is one of the best. I remember we showed that at the theater that I was a projectionist at. I sat in the crowd for the first time, and I compared it to being a kid again and watching Jurassic Park on the big screen. Just the bigness, the wonder of it, the world building of like what these trolls are and the different kinds of trolls. You get like five or six different kinds of trolls in that movie, including ones that fart, and it's amazing. So yeah, you want the best troll movie out there? I'm gonna give it to Troll Hunter. I think that one handled the mythology, handled the spectacle of it, and grounded it in reality in such wonderful ways. And it's just a blast. I think it's on Peacock and like a bunch of other things, but it's definitely on Tubi. Because of course it's on Tubi. Everything's on Tubi.
And well, let me ask you guys this. Do you prefer your trolls like kaiju sized, larger than average, or like little tiny troll sized?
I think we know Jay's answer.
I prefer them little tiny troll sized, and not only that, I prefer them animated. And this is what Korea's waiting for. I love the Trolls animated movies. They're based on those troll dolls from like the 80s with the like fucked up hair. But I love those movies. And there's nothing horror about them, so I'm not going to spend too much time on them. But if you haven't seen them, whenever I watch these movies, and it's always around awards voting time, I get sent a screener. I've never actually gone to a theater and seen one. But I'll be, you know, in one room just cracking up laughing, and my wife will come in and she'll be like, "What are you watching that's making you laugh so much?" I'm all, "It's a Trolls movie." The way they use music and the way, you know, and the two main trolls are Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick, who are both amazing singers. So, I mean, the way they use music is just amazing in these movies, and they're hysterical. They just, they crack me up. They kill me. I have so much fun with them. Anyway, so yeah, I prefer my trolls animated and tiny.
I mean, I haven't seen those movies, but that first one has that one fire song. You know, what is it? The dance, dance, dance one. That's a banger.
The newest one has NSYNC in it, and NSYNC reunion.
Eric Andre.
Eric Andre plays one of Justin Timberlake's characters. His name is Branch. It turns out he was in a boy band when he was a baby. And Eric Andre is one of his brothers.
Yeah. See, if it was a reunion of of Josie and the Pussycats, I would be more excited. Or
don't Spice even get Girls. Me started. Josie and the Pussycats is in my top 10 all time. I think I've already covered that. I love Josie and the Pussycats.
But for me, when it comes to trolls, I mean, my you're talking size wise. I got to go big. I mean, they don't have to be kaiju size. I appreciate it when they are. I love it when they are. But I mean, the classic Billy Goat Guff type troll under a bridge, where they're like these big menacing things, but they're also a little like, because Billy Goat Gruff, like, you know, they're a little sassy, you know, when they're about that size, you know.
You're venturing into It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia territory with the Nightman Cometh, the musical that Charlie
the Troll
wrote.
Toll.
Yeah, and Danny DeVito plays the troll, and he's all, "You got to pay the troll toll if you want to get this boy's hole."
Well, I'm sorry, what did you say?
No, boy's hole.
It's soul.
No, it's soul. It's boy's soul.
I wrote soul.
That's what I'm saying, boy's hole.
So good. But no, I mean, Troll Hunter even had a troll under the bridge, and it was brilliant because they had like a goat on the bridge to be bait, and then like the Troll Hunter comes out in like this like fucking like knight armor meets Iron Man shoddy put together thing, and then he just gets absolutely like just wailed on and thrown around. It's great. But like those type of trolls are great. I mean, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters had a great troll bit where the troll was made to look like he was going to be evil and bad and all this stuff, but then he ends up helping them out, and he had some of the gnarliest death scenes, just like tearing people apart and squishing them and stuff.
Yeah, and played by Friday the 13th 2009's Derek Mears.
That's right. Yeah. Oh man,
that's one of my favorite parts about it. I think it's either Hatchet 3 or Victor Crowley. Kane Hodder gets to kill Derek Mears.
Oh, it's Hatchet 3. Yeah, that was Hatchet 3.
Ah, if you know, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm always down for more actionized trolls, because like in the original Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings, you know, when they fight that cave troll.
Oh, of course. The cave troll in Lord of the Rings. First of all, one of the great things about, you know, the Lord of the Rings universe is the stark difference between Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, because the Hobbit is a fun fantasy, not light read, but it's definitely, its tone is much more fun, right, than Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is an epic, but you see the big difference in how they treat trolls, because in Lord of the Rings, the cave troll is menacing. It's huge. It's scary, right? But in the Hobbit, you have the three trolls. They're just shooting the shit, being kind of little big bastards, you know, just being like, oh, which one are we going to eat? This one doesn't have enough meat on its bones, you know, like. I love that type of troll, you know. I respect the cave troll. I love the cave troll, but like the Hobbit trolls are where it's at, and it's really cool because they made the Hobbit movies after Lord of the Rings. And if you notice, when they freeze because the sun comes up because Bilbo tricks them, they freeze in the same position that they are in the Lord of the Rings movies. When you see them in that one scene, it's like a almost blinking you miss it little nod. But yeah, fun stuff. Didn't need to be three movies, so two. It should have been two movies, but I'll get over it someday.
Someday.
No, I won't, actually, because have you seen the artwork that Guillermo del Toro made when he was developing that fucking movie? His orcs were incredible and insanely detailed. Okay, I'm done. Sorry. All right, I'll bring it up. Harry Potter troll in the first movie, the troll in the bathroom. God, that CGI. It was not good for its time, and it aged even worse. Like, that was like Lawnmower Man level almost. Like, yeah, the PlayStation 2 version of the troll looked better than it did in that movie. That's about all I have to say about Harry Potter.
Yeah, the less said about Harry Potter, the better. Except the Harry Potter Jr. and Sr. in Troll.
Bringing it back to Charles Band.
That's our preferred trolls. But I also will be remiss if we don't bring up Border, which is... Yeah.
Now, do you consider her a troll?
They are trolls. They said they're trolls.
Did they say they were trolls? Okay.
Oh, yeah. They're trolls.
And it might have gotten lost in the translation for me.
Oh, yeah. And that's again, the cool thing about with anything that's like made up, you can say whatever you want and it's real, because it's not, there's no like true like thing, like, you know. It's not like fish where you can say, oh, yeah, now fish fly and breathe air. It's like, well, no, that's not how fish work. But like, when you're talking about fantasy stuff, you know, the rules can always be bent. You can always have like, do crucifix stop this vampire? No, not in our version.
But wait. But we already determined that trolls are real.
Oh, but
there's been documentaries.
There's real trolls and then there's fantasy trolls. Okay?
Because of that real documentary, Troll Hunter.
Right. Well, that's very specific type of trolls, right? But there's also all these different kinds of ones, and I think that's what's so cool about trolls, is that you can have like your Tolkien trolls, you can have, and even in there you have your Hobbit trolls and then you have your cave trolls, but then you can have something like Border come out where it's another one that's like really steeped in realism, but it also is like just a very horny movie. And all you have to know about Border is that it's incredible and it's extremely horny. That doesn't mean that it's erotic. It's just a horny movie, but it's incredible. So yeah, if you're going to walk away from this conversation going, what troll movie should I watch? It's Troll Hunter, it's Border, and it's Ernest Scared Stupid for me. What about you guys? Top three troll movies.
Trolls, Here They Come, Trolls and They're Back, and The Goblet of Trolls. No, my top three: Trolls, Trolls World Tour, and Trolls Band Together.
All right, you got the full set there.
God damn it.
For me, I'd have to say Troll Hunter, Charles Band Trolls, John Carl Beekler, and Ernest Scared Stupid.
Ernest Scared Stupid.
Yep. I mean, I gotta.
Yeah. And not to mention, Laika made the incredible box troll. So there's a
world. Oh, yeah. Wealth. Yeah, that was a good one, too.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is trolls rule. Why don't people talk about trolls more often? You know,
yeah, I think it's just that the term trolls just been superseded by people acting like assholes on the Internet.
I was going to say trolls rule, except for the more modern version of a troll, which is an Internet troll.
Yeah, nobody likes Internet trolls.
Nah,
actually, that reminds me. There was that great episode of What We Do in the Shadows, where Colin Robinson got into a tiff with somebody online, and it turned out it was a literal internet troll. Like, he goes to fight him, and then it turns out it's this giant-ass troll in an alley who's going to kick his ass.
So good.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, that was
only
that was
What
a
We
fun
Do in
episode.
The Shadows would do that.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, I think it was like Colin Robinson went out to Jersey City, and yeah, there's this troll who has a cell phone and is trolling people online, but he's a big ass troll, so when they try to fight him, he beats the shit out of them.
So good. So
it's a literal troll. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, what are your favorite trolls in movies? What did we miss? Let us know, and don't troll us. Or troll us. I don't know. Sometimes we could be amused by it. But yeah, let's wrap this discussion about trolls up. Our theme song is by Restless Spirit, so go give them a listen. And our artwork is by Chris Fisher, so go give him a like. You can find us on any of the socials under Ion Horror or at ihorror.com. There is still time to vote for the iHorror Awards. At least I think there will still be by the time this posts. By the time we're recording, there is still time. But anyway, go vote for the iHorror Awards.
Yeah.
And it's going to be... Best International is going to be a real dogfight between When Evil Lurks and Godzilla Minus One. So it's going to need every vote.
That's a hard choice. That's a
it is a tough
one.
Choice.
That's a tough choice. I was sitting here going, yeah. What do I pick?
Because also they're two very different movies too.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's possible to like both of them the same. So yeah, it's a toughie. But yeah, go check that out and go make your voice heard in the iHorror Awards. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. So for me, James J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
And I'm Jonathan Correa.
Keep your eye on horror.